the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, we all know as we age, it's important to keep ourselves in shape. Whether that's exercise, going for walking, weightlifting, going to the gym. But are there certain restrictions or are there better ways of exercising as we get older? Joining me on the program is Erica Pitch. She's Health Science Assistant Clinical Professor at the University of California, San Francisco. Erica, one of the things that we often see as individuals age, we hear about people falling, breaking their hips, and lack of mobility. So I want to approach exercise from the viewpoint, as you age, are there things that you should be doing, number one? Number two, is there a better form of exercise? And are there certain things that we should focus on as we get older? In other words, from 60 to 70 to 80, what should we be doing?
All right. Well, first, thanks for having me. And second, that's a big question.
Okay.
So I think, first and foremost, there's no one perfect exercise for each individual. However, there are certain universal truths. Everybody needs to keep moving. First rule of anything is first lose no ground. So whether it's a walking program, whether it's strengthening program, first level is if you are sedentary, people need to start moving and keep moving. Second, I think in terms of, especially for fall prevention, there are a couple of really concrete things people can do in addition to just walking. Strength training can help improve bone density, improve overall strength, which also has a benefit for arthritic joints as well. But what science has had a hard time connecting the dots with is if we do these individualized muscle groups and strength groups, that doesn't directly change fall risk. It can change like the impact of a fall. For example, if you have better bone density, you're less likely to get hurt. But training that ability to not fall, that reactive stepping, that if you catch your toe on a curb, can you get your foot in front of you in time? I was actually just in PubMed this morning preparing for this interview, and we're finding more and more that perturbation-based training, or literally being pushed off balance on purpose, so it trains you to react to a loss of balance, can have great benefits for preventing those falls. However, the application is a little bit challenging because that's not something you just recommend going to the gym and having somebody shove you around. So it would be definitely something to try with a clinician. But for anyone out there, you know, who's just thinking about exercise, the first step is to just get moving by any means necessary. And then if you really want to get specific, doing more perturbation-based training for the express purpose of preventing falls.
So, you know, there's all kinds of exercise. We have weightlifting, we have cardio, we have things like Pilates, yoga, and it seems to me that almost the best combination, Erica, would be some form of, let's say, some strength training for bone density, as you talk about, because I know I have clients who are in therapy that are in their late 80s, and one of the things that they're doing is they're having them go through strength training using weights to strengthen the bones and give them that strength. And you mentioned something that's very important, because this is something I discovered. I'm a sailor, so when you're out in the ocean and the boat's tipping and you're tacking, it's very important to keep balance. I use what is called balance boards, where you stay on the board and try to balance yourself. Are there certain kinds of therapy like that, or things that you would add to, let's say, widen your routine? And what about the strengthening of your core?
So first, yes, the combination of cardiovascular exercise is important for overall cardiovascular health, brain health. There's many, many benefits of just getting your cardio. But I think strength training has been underrepresented in the past, and especially with older adults, I think we've been timid in challenging older adults, so much so that the American Physical Therapy Association put out a position statement in conjunction with a consumer advocacy group saying five things physical therapists and patients should question. Number two was don't under-challenge older adults in strength training. Instead, match their abilities and goals, you know, the intensity of the exercise to what that individual is capable of. And most recommendations for strength training is only twice a week. So just 8 to 10 exercises, two sets of strengthening exercises can have a markedly beneficial effect. And this includes, as part of that, core strengthening. So core is another piece of the puzzle in terms of overall body strength. So when you're doing something like a squat or when you're doing a plank, you should be engaging your core muscles in those exercises. And we tend to find that strengthening core in a functional context, so not necessarily crunches, because then you just get good at bending your torso, but keeping your body stable as you're doing a plank, keeping your body stable as you do a squat, is a more direct translation of core strengthening and overall lower extremity strengthening. So that would be the optimal addition. In regards to balance training, yeah, the perturbation board, any sort of wobble board, if you've used it before and you have, you know, I always like to look for a safety net. If you've done it for the first time, you always want to make sure you have something nearby to hold on to and then just float your hands so you have something to catch yourself if you need to. But if that's too difficult, even standing with your feet closer together can be a challenge for some people. For others, when I'm working with patients, because even a wobble board, although it's uneven and provides some sort of unexpected perturbation, that's what we're looking for. I'll even get people on a turf cord, which is like a bungee cord on a belt, and have them pull that forward, and then it tries to yank you backwards or give sort of unexpected perturbations, which is what we're finding. It can be very helpful. But something as simple as standing on a wobble board or standing with your feet together can also be a really helpful way of improving your balance.
I read somewhere, Erica, there were certain exercises that are really important that emulate things that we do. For example, bending down to pick up and lift things. So things like squats, planks, chest press, things that we do in ordinary life. I can't tell you the number of times I have to bend down and lift something. And if you don't have the right core strength or don't know how to bend and lift, you can injure yourself.
Right. And that's why if someone's embarking on an exercise program, or especially embarking on a strength training program, it's really important to make sure that they know how to do it correctly. Because, like you said, it's really easy to hurt oneself doing these exercises, but they're also really, really important to do for prevention and for preservation, to preserve that ability to get up from the floor, to bend over and pick something up. We really try to emphasize more practical fitness as opposed to single muscle isolation exercises. Form is essential. So making sure that when you do embark on an exercise program, having someone that can watch you and make sure you're doing these exercises correctly.
You know, is it important, Erica, for somebody that's starting out to get maybe a trainer or coach? For example, it's much easier when you go to a gym to get on a machine. But if you really want flexibility and core strengthening, I think sometimes free weights do a better job, but you may not be ready for that when you're starting out.
Correct. And especially if you're trying to get sort of the bonus of balance and stability, because machines are great for isolating single muscle groups. I mean, you can sit down and just move them around. But I always tell my patients, your balance is great lying down. Your balance is great sitting. But working free weights or doing anything where you're standing up, you're still working your balance mechanisms as well as strengthening your muscles. But that amount of freedom of movement also equates to opportunities for disaster. So you're exactly right in having guidance of making sure your form is correct, because that's probably the single most important way of preventing an injury, is matching your strength to the proper exercise. Many times in the gym, my colleague and I will see people who are doing weights much heavier than they're capable and doing all sorts of compensatory movements in order to move this huge weight around, when that can result in injury, is the attempts to move something heavier than they should, and they do sort of a lot of abnormal movements in order to do that. That's where problems can happen. So having some professional help, and it may not mean like every single time you exercise, but having somebody help you get started so that you know what you need to do and so you have learned how to do that exercise correctly is really important for injury prevention and also optimal results.
You know, something that maybe you can clarify, you said as we began this conversation, as you age, it's very important to stay active. In other words, keep moving, doing something. When it comes to cardio, I have some clients that are actually in their 60s running marathons. But also, could it be something just simple like going for a 20-minute or a half an hour walk, or maybe on a treadmill? I mean, goodness, we have all kinds of cardio machines today, from treadmills to bikes to Ellipticals to rowing machines, you name it, we've got it. But what is essential?
Excellent question. The mode, like how you do it, whether it's walking, cardio, ellipticals, whatever, the key ingredient for any cardiovascular exercise is that it incorporates major muscle groups, it's rhythmic, and that results in an increase in your heart rate. So that's the key thing. I mean, for benefit, people should be working at an intensity where that they can talk but not sing. For example, if somebody's on the treadmill and they're like singing along with their iPod or having a really in-depth conversation or speaking, you know, multiple words in a row, for example, I should not be able to give this interview with, you know, as long as sentences as I'm saying without needing to take a breath. You should be able to have a perceived exertion, like how hard you're working at a moderate to light intensity. So that's how you know you're getting, you know, a cardiovascular challenge. But whether it's walking, I mean, walking is the most recommended because it's cheap and available. All it requires is a pair of shoes and just getting out there. The recommended duration by the American College of Sports Medicine is 30 minutes of getting your heart rate up. But if you don't have 30 minutes, that's okay. 10 minutes, doing 3 10-minute walks, that's definitely better than sitting for that 30 minutes or 2 15-minute walks. Anything that you can do, even if it's putting on your favorite songs and, you know, dancing around your living room, nobody's watching, it's okay. You know, but anything like that. Your rowing machine, if you like the rowing machine and you can sit, that's fine. For me, I can't sit that long. I like to swim. If you don't like the water or don't like the chlorine, that's fine. And that's where I think it gets more and more challenging, especially as we age, because we sometimes have to reinvent things. Running is not for everyone. The outliers are the ones in their 80s that are running marathons. I'm 47 and I don't run anymore because my joints are lousy. So I swim or I do elliptical. And especially it's, I think, challenging for people who used to do one thing and then they can't anymore to find another option. And that's also where if you're getting stuck or having a hard time getting motivated to get, you know, whatever mode of exercise, that and we're getting professional help and guidance to find the exercise that's a match for you.
You know, one of the things that I learned early on when I began using a trainer, Erica, was what he called muscle mixing, or confusion is a better word to use it. Because a lot of times you'll see people, I have a good friend and I'm always chiding him about this. He does the same exercises, the same reps, the same thing constantly. Then he wonders why he doesn't improve versus like... I tell him, I go, no wonder you aren't improving. You're doing the same. He's doing the same exercises today that he was doing 6 7 years ago. Has his half an hour routine. But what about what they call, my trainer taught me, muscle confusion. So let's say you're doing a bench press on a machine, then to switch to a bench press with dumbbells or with cables. So you're always mixing it up. So your muscles, because it's easy if you do the same thing, as you mentioned. For example, there are a lot of machines for doing what I call ab exercises, ab machines. What you do is you just train a certain muscle compared to, let's say, doing a plank or doing something else. What about muscle confusion?
Muscle confusion, or like variability in training. They used to call it in sports training periodization. So you would change the weight training regimen depending on where someone was in a sports season. You know, like during the summer, you'd rebuild, you weren't working on a sports skill, and then you'd sort of taper off the weight training. But for the rest of us mere mortals who are just trying to stay in shape, having a basket of chest exercises, you know, like you have your bench press, you have your dumbbell flies, you have your planks, you have your wide arm planks, you have all this variety of exercise to work that one muscle group. So you can also do a cable row or different exercises like that. But it's not only the exercise itself. It's the speed, the resistance, the volume. So whether you're working on improving explosive power or muscular endurance or strength, it's messing with the timing and intensity as well as the individual exercise. The key important thing with all this too is not only the variety, but the challenge and the intensity. And I think what's hard for motivation is that you really, when you're doing those 3 sets of 10, you know, or the basic overall number of repetitions for improving general strength is 8 to 12 repetitions, meaning you cannot do 13. If you can do 13, then you need to change something. Do 13 well, you know, so being really mindful of your performance. Are you going till that muscle is really burning and screaming and you're still doing it right? Then you need to make it harder. And that's where I think having a buddy or somebody to check you in is, are you really working as hard as you can? And that's what really also promotes this consistent improvement, is the variability of practice, not only type of exercise, but intensity and progressing the intensity.
Erica, have you found that, let's say a person ages, obviously when you're in your 60s, and let's say you start a healthy routine and you're doing exercises, but all of a sudden you go from 60 to 70 to 80, are there certain things that you shouldn't be doing, like let's say in your 80s, or does it really depend on your overall condition and health?
It really depends on your overall condition and health and what you've been doing before. The American College of Sports Medicine actually updated their exercise guidelines in 2015 in terms of, you know, medical screening. Because really, when somebody has been exercising or not, it's, you know, whether their body is ready for it, but also if they have any other active symptoms of current or active illness, like cardiovascular or metabolic illness, and how intensely they're trying to work. And so for someone like in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, there is, at any level, people can start exercising. It's just how hard. And there's really no absolutes. I mean, generally, there are certain things that are more diagnosis specific. There are certain levels where if you have really low bone density, then doing impact sports, probably not a good idea. But if you have borderline bone density, then doing weight training can help improve that. So it really is depends on the individual history.
Let's talk about, say, somebody's retired, or maybe they've had a physical and their doctor says, hey, look, you need to lose weight, you need to start exercising. Let's talk about some of the prerequisites, because we've all heard about these weekend warriors that all of a sudden they overstress their heart and they have heart attacks, or they overstress their body. What should an individual do? I would think one of the requirements, if you were going to start an exercise program, is to go see a doctor and get a complete physical, tell your doctor and say, hey, I'm joining a gym, I'm starting out, tell me what kind of shape I'm in.
Yeah, and that's what the American College of Sports Medicine has set up this position paper that says if someone doesn't participate in regular exercise, like starting from scratch, and also has known cardiovascular illness or metabolic illness, in particular diabetes or renal disease, even if they're symptomatic, then they would need to see their physician, or they recommend medical clearance. Then after they've been cleared to participate by a healthcare provider, starting at that light to moderate intensity. So we're talking light intensity is like 30 to 40% of your heart rate reserve, which is like the percentage of your heart rate maximum, up to about 40 to 60%. So that's that light sweat. You can still probably say a pretty long sentence while walking. And then gradually progressing towards more intense exercise. But for just starting out, of course, anyone is going to start out at light intensity. But if they have any known medical history, heart disease, diabetes, or renal disease, even if they're symptomatic, they should see their physician first. If they don't have any formal diagnosis and they're not having any signs and symptoms of any illness, then light to moderate exercise can be started.
And what about the idea, for safety reason, having a heart monitor and knowing that what they call the safe zone for heart, where you take, I think it's the figure 220, and you take your age and 80% of that number, so you come up and you know what your safe heart zones are. What about something like a heart monitor when you're engaged in exercise?
That can be helpful for feedback, but it's not necessarily required. And usually it's not only like that safe zone, you don't want to be working too hard, but when if someone's just starting, almost if they're not working hard enough. So even just that perceived exertion, that looking at how hard you're breathing, are you developing a little bit of a sweat? That's a good indicator. And like on a lot of the machines, you can do little spot checks of your heart rate. But sometimes the microanalysis, if you're totally asymptomatic and healthy, can, you know, might be more data than you really need. If you're symptomatic and have heart history, then you'll be going to cardiac rehab and you'll be more closely monitored.
You know, it's amazing all the monitoring devices that they're coming out. You know, we've seen Fitbit. You've got the Apple Watch that tracks your heart rate and your steps and all these little electronic devices. And I've been reading medical technology. Is there going to be coming out in the future, probably in the next 5 or 10 years, with something that can monitor your health, store the data, and then transmit that data to your doctor?
I wouldn't be surprised. Now that's being utilized through patients. Often patients will track their own data and go, hey, you know, this is what I found. So it's beginning that way, but we don't have auto alerts as of yet. But I think those tools can be really helpful also for motivation. But there's all kinds of stuff coming up on the horizon in terms of monitoring and health trackers. We're just beginning to scratch the surface, I think.
Finally, Erica, have you found a book out there on exercise, especially for somebody that is older? Because, I mean, I can go to the bookstore, you can go on Amazon, there's all kinds of books on weightlifting. But, you know, I'm talking about somebody that gets into their 60s, 70s, and 80s. Have you found a very good exercise book that explains the basics and the most important exercises to do?
You know, I haven't. I haven't looked on Amazon lately for that. Yeah, I don't really give individual endorsements, especially for a motor skill. I would recommend against somebody starting off exercise or learning an exercise from a book when they don't have the visual feedback. They need someone making sure they're doing it correctly because, again, that's that opportunity for injury if one's doing it incorrectly or matching their ability to the right exercise.
In my case, when I got back into exercise, realizing that you can injure yourself, mm-hmm. I hired a trainer. And I also looked for somebody that was used to working with somebody that is older, because last thing I wanted is some 25, 26-year-old, and there's a 40-year difference, obviously, unless he's skilled with working with older people. Are there things that you would recommend if you were looking for a trainer, a certification, a designation that tells you that you're working with somebody that is good to help you out?
Yes. There are several different certifying organizations out there. Probably the top two are the American College of Sports Medicine, so ACSM, and they do different levels of certification. They even have a inclusive certification or advanced training in more inclusive exercise. So for people with additional needs, that's not necessarily even older adults, because that's part of the basic certification, I believe, but people with disabilities even. NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association, is another one. Both of those are well-known professional organizations that are some of the two gold standards for fitness instructors. ACE, the American Council on Exercise, is also another one. But you should look for at least one of those three because they're more nationally recognized. And they have certain requirements. For example, the American College of Sports Medicine, one of their certifications require that you actually have a bachelor's in exercise physiology or at least a certain number of hours working in the profession. So it has criteria in order to even sit for the exam. And so those ones with the most rigorous inclusion criteria. What gets confusing is that the organization may be good quality, but you don't know what their criteria were. It could have been either a weekend course versus a mail-in thing. So you really need to confirm with the trainer like what their credentials are and what it took to get it.
All right. Well, listen, Erica, it was great to have you on the program because this is a topic I want to cover because we all know as we age, as you just mentioned, you got to stay moving. You got to stay flexible if you want to avoid the kind of injuries that we hear about all the time, somebody falling, breaking a hip or damaging their knees. I want to thank you for coming on the program and I hope to talk to you again in the future.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking with you.
You know, I hope you found this program helpful because, you know, one of the things that we have found as we age, it's very important, as Erica mentioned, to keep moving, to stay flexible. But it's also important to know the right kind of exercises. And as she talked about, if you're just starting out doing something new, you want to be careful that you're doing the right exercises. You don't overstress your body. You get a complete physical and do all those things and then maybe get the proper trainer to begin an exercise program because you worked your entire life to get to retirement. Why not live a healthy retirement, be strong, stay healthy, and live long? In the meantime, well, as always, we've run out of time. On behalf of myself, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. We hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.